couple of minutes after 1 o'clock on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you on a Friday edition of Smith and Jones as we bring it into the weekend, the holiday weekend stateside, as folks celebrating Thanksgiving yesterday, a couple of games in the National Football League, and approaching another big week coming up on Sunday with lots of questions swirling around the NFL with more COVID cases rising, specifically with the Baltimore Ravens and with one of their marquee players in Lamar Jackson. We will talk about that over the course of the next hour. And a ton to talk about today, and you've been hearing a ton of it. You just heard it with George Russick on the Sports Update as well, Jonesy, and on a lot of our programming up until this point. The Toronto Blue Jays, as news comes out today in the report by the Globe and Mail, that the Jays may be looking to, well, Rogers specifically, may be looking to tear down and rebuild Rogers Centre. And we're going to get to that in just a couple of brief moments. But before anything else today, I'm quite honestly, I know we're paid to do this and this is what we do for a living, but I'm struggling to find the words right now to properly honor and properly mention the career of one of our colleagues and one of our friends in Mike Wilner. It was announced a little bit earlier that Mike will not be returning to call Blue Jay games alongside Ben Wagner. And I know that Mike has released a statement, as has Rogers and Sportsnet, thanking Mike for over 20 years of calling games on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Mike's message. And it's a very lengthy one and a very heartfelt, impassioned one. But I just wanted to read a brief portion of it. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but Mike sent out via social media, "Today my heart is broken, as I won't be part of the Blue Jays broadcast crew going forward, but I got to live an absolute dream for the last two decades. Who would have ever thought that a kid who grew up at Bathurst and Steeles in Toronto, listening to Tom Cheek and Jerry Hauer through a speaker hidden under his pillow, would actually get to sit in a booth with those two legends, never mind actually go on the air with them and call playoff games for my hometown team." And it goes on, speaking about some of the many people that he worked with and the thrill that it was holding down that job again for over 20 years. But the last line to kind of tie into the very beginning: "Dreams can come true, even if they don't always last as long as you'd like them to. Thank you all so much for everything." And Mike, I'll say personally, not just professionally, thank you as well for all of your years and for the games, because you've became a voice for all of us to listen to as well. You know, whether it be sitting in the backyard or in the car in the summer months, in the springtime, and certainly into the fall and the postseason, calling games, and you became synonymous with the broadcast as well. And I can say personally, and Jonesy, I'll certainly give you the platform as well. As folks, I speak on a personal level too. Mike is a friend, will still be a friend. I have not had a chance to speak to him personally yet, because this news came fairly close to showtime for us, but I will be speaking with Mike later on today and certainly continue to be friendly with him for the years that come. And there's nothing that I wouldn't do for Mike, and he's a guy that I would, pardon the bad pun, go to bat for anytime. So I wish Mike absolutely all the best in both his professional world and certainly personally, and I have no doubt that you know, there are still big things to come for Mike Wilner.
Eric, I echo everything you said. I will, you know, at some point reach out to Mike. I've done it in writing, but it's different when you actually get a chance to speak to somebody. I'll give many people a story that they probably don't know. I go back to probably 19, I'm racking the old brains here. I'm shaking the rocks around. Probably back to about 1986. No, later, maybe after that. 87, somewhere in there. When Mike Wilner was the sports director at University of Toronto Radio. And he called on some guy named Paul Jones, who had just kind of finished coaching at university, was coaching high school all-star teams and was coaching provincial teams, and, you know, still in that age where he could play a little bit and was hoping to catch on with the national team. And Mike reached out to me to call games for U of T. And it was crazy, considering I was a guy that went to York. I mean, that's like, you know, that's like asking a guy from Duke if he wants to call games for Carolina, or, you know, a guy from Corvallis if he wants to go to Eugene, and, you know, went to Oregon State and called games for Oregon. Like, that's, you know, and I thought, no, this is something I want to get into. I'd been working in All Sports TV for a bit. And I thought, and my brother was about to make the move. I thought, yeah, this is a good chance of starts where everybody starts. And I called the games with the late Bernie Ofstie for U of T Radio. And I, you know, in that sense, Mike reached out and helped me get my start too. So, and we've known each other ever since. So I know it's a tough day for him, but, as you said, I'm sure that, you know, other opportunities will come his way, and, he'll, as he always has been, you know, his passion and his love will, you know, have him prepared for whatever comes his way.
And the news of this comes on a day where the Blue Jays and more specifically Rogers Communications making headlines, a story coming out in the Globe and Mail that, again, Rogers looking to find a new home for the Toronto Blue Jays, whether that new home is in the current location where Rogers Centre is at this very moment and a tear down and rebuild, or if it's in a new location somewhere else in the city, somewhere along the waterfront, that remains to be seen. But lots of speculation out there, Jonesy, about the future home of the Toronto Blue Jays. And there is a statement, and I believe George just mentioned it at the top of the hour as well, but for those that didn't hear it, perhaps the statement from Rogers Communication is this, word for word: prior to the pandemic, we were exploring options for the stadium, but through this year, our primary focus has been keeping our customers connected and our employees safe. So there is no update on the Rogers Centre to share at this time. Now, that's the official word from Rogers Communication, but they're certainly, you know, somebody's talking, as sources have told the Globe and Mail, about this report of, again, a potential tear down and rebuild in the location right now where Rogers Centre currently is, and it would involve public space and no doubt some green space along with office towers and condominiums and a smaller stadium with natural grass and whatnot. The biggest question I have, Jonesy, in all of this, and it's been talked about quite a bit this morning on this very radio station, the projection for rebuilding this entire stadium and the whole complex, this new sort of city within a city, 5 to 8 years. I don't understand where the Blue Jays are playing. I mean, it'd be bad enough if you had to miss a season, two at most. Where the heck are you playing and relocating for 5 to 8 years? I kind of scratch my head at that. I don't quite get it.
Well, and I'll say this, and we had Steve Ashburner on the other day talking about the Raptors going to Tampa and relocation, and how I remember the Seattle Supersonics did it for 1 year, played in the Tacoma Dome when Key Arena was being renovated. Heck, I'm a New York Mets fan when I was a kid, and I remember a year that the Yankees played at Shea Stadium while Yankee Stadium was being renovated. And I can think of things where people have had stop gaps where you do it for a year, maybe 2 years. Man, 5 to 8's a long time. You know, and it's, you know, I bring up the New York situation. It's not like where the Mets and Yankees, they could share a big league stadium. This there's nowhere for the Jays to go here, and that's the hard thing. You know, it's not even like it's an arena. Like, you know, remember when they tore down the Chicago Stadium and they built the United Center? It was right across the street. You know, the parking lot that we park our cars in now when we do games against the Bulls in Chicago used to be the old Chicago Stadium. So it's the timing and the space that's the issue. I love the idea, but there are some logistics that, you know, are above my pay grade that need to be worked out.
I echo those sentiments as well, Jonesy. I love the idea as well. I love the idea of a smaller stadium. I love the idea of natural grass. I love the idea of hopefully being a little more open air, or at least, you know, with more windows and open space for people to walk around the stadium and maybe have a beer and not just sit in their seats and not as much concrete and everything. I love it all. I just don't understand the logistics of it. And you know, you talked about a tear down of one place and building across the street, which obviously they did with Yankee Stadium as well, and there are other examples of it. I mean, the Toronto Raptors, as much as people look back to the then Skydome days and not ideal for playing basketball, between Skydome and Maple Leaf Gardens, the Raptors had a home to play in while they awaited the completion of construction of their brand new building, and that it was a fairly seamless move to move from they were going from a less ideal location into a far better one, into a what originally was supposed to be basketball only, but became obviously multi-complex with basketball and hockey, into then Air Canada Center, now Scotiabank Arena. But it was there, ready for the making. It wasn't relocate to another city. And the only thing I can think of possibly is, and I don't know the answer to this, is there any way to reconfigure BMO Field to make it baseball friendly and conducive to baseball in terms of the dimensions? And I know that would certainly piss off a ton of soccer fans, let alone CFL folks, and having that turf used by now baseball, not just soccer and football. And I don't even know if it's logistically possible based on the sizing and the arrangement of the seats and everything else.
Yeah.
The configuration might not fit it. I don't know. That's the only thing I could think of. But speaking of the Toronto Raptors, and again, playing at then Sky Dome and Maple Leaf Gardens, and a couple of games at Copps Coliseum in Hamilton as well, kind of ready-made waiting when they went into then Air Canada Center. And to maybe talk about that and shed some light on this situation from a perspective from a man who was right there on the front lines and right at the top of all the conversations involving the Raptors back then, the former CEO of Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, and now small business owner as well, Richard Petty. Richard, thanks for your time today.
I'm glad to weigh in on, as you pointed out, a very complex issue.
Richard, to that point, maybe simply put off the top, where do you start with this? I mean, it was such a complicated issue. How do you think that the ball starts rolling on conversations like this to get to a point where you make a decision about a potential tear down rebuild in the same spot, and then everything that comes with it, not the least of which is, where the heck do you play games?
Well, actually, I want to call on my 4 years at Skydome, too, because, you
sure,
know, I took
sure.
over Skydome 3 months after it was built. In fact, still had to finish a hotel off and finish the roof off and all those things. One thing that's very complex, and I'm not sure how many people are thinking about it, I believe that's a 100-year lease. So they're now, what, into 31 or so years of that lease. I think that land might be owned by CNE. So, you know, who owns that property? It's not simply, I'm going to tear this thing down, it's my property, and I'm going to build a bunch of condos on it. It is incredibly complex. And what, you know, they'd done that before I took over as president, but I lived with the complexity the whole time. So there's going to be a bunch of parties who say, okay, yeah, you can tear that down, but it's my land, and this is what it's going to cost. You're not getting the land for free. The Rogers does not own that land. So that's a complexity. Then you're right. There is no place to put that down there. And, you know, you think about, you disrupt the Blue Jays by tearing down Skydome, your concept of BMO Field. Now you're disrupting TFC and the Argos. So, and I think that footprint's long gone, too, for their use. So that's my first thoughts. I'll let you ask me some more questions because I've got thoughts about financing and stuff like that.
Richard, I mean, you guys are into that, and that's way above my pay grade and the level that I think of things. But at a more simplistic level, you talk about where to play and all the other things going on. You were at the forefront when Maple Leaf Square was being put together and the condos and all of that. And in theory, it's a great idea, but what are some of the things that go into that? I mean, we're not even talking about the sports side of things here, but just the whole building side of things, putting up a building, a residence. There's got to be other issues going on with that as well.
Well, you know, when I took over the Raptors, Bitov and Slade had already bought the property. And if you remember, there was a lot of vacant land down there in those days. We really kicked off the development of all those areas. So, you know, we had a piece of land, and we built Air Canada Center. Then, you know, with partners, we built Maple Leaf Square. But again, it was a parking lot. And then across the street, TELUS moved in. It was a parking lot. There aren't parking lots. So if they are looking to build a new stadium, I think another big problem, where are you going to build it in the downtown core? I mean, where is that land? Maybe in the, what do they call it, the railroad lands? But they've got a plan down there. you know, figuring that out with a whole bunch of federal, provincial, municipal owners, finding the location is going to be really tough. And you were right, and because I was listening to you before you brought me on, you've got to build that stadium ahead of time before you tear down SkyDome. I mean, it's going to take a couple of years. And boy, stadiums today are going for like $1 billion. So then we go into the next issue. Rogers, who's in the broadcast business, who's in the baseball business because of content, it's a hobby. I mean, is this Rogers' company, or is this Edward, who's I understand is in a bit of a developer as well? It's a big cost of doing that, and you know, with all the issues with COVID, about there's just, you know, people gathering. Even if it'll be an open air stadium. It'll be Camden Yards. It'll be better than Camden Yards. It'll probably seat 38,000 or 41,000. But how viable is sports? There is a lot of moving pieces on this. It is not easy. So to get it done, it's going to cost a lot of money and a lot of time. If it can get done.
Yeah, speaking with Richard Petty, again, president, former president and CEO of SkyDome and former CEO of Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment as well. Richard, one of the pieces in the report, the article in the Globe and Mail, I'm just going to read this quickly. This is one of the last lines in the article. It said, 4 years ago, Toronto City Council voted to move forward on the Rail Deck Park, a potential 20-acre public space created by covering the rail tracks north of Rogers Centre. In the news release, it said that the $1.66 billion project was meant to unite surrounding visitor attractions, including Rogers Centre, CN Tower, Ripley's Aquarium, Fort York, and the Bentway, into a major destination district. And last year, the developer Oxford Properties launched a $3.5 billion four-tower project just north of the stadium and the planned Rail Deck Park. When we look at that, combined with the already, I believe, protected land of the rail park that's there, the half circle with the rail yards that's just south of the dome and just south of Ripley's Aquarium. There's, in my mind, I could be wrong here, there's nowhere to build the stadium other than where it is right now, unless it means moving it somewhere else. And then to your point, where is there to put it in the downtown core other than somewhere on the waterfront, which then leads me to my question, Richard. From all the planning you did and meetings you've been in, will people want this thing back at, you know, like say Ontario Place, if it was able to go there? Are people going to want to get off a subway to then get on a streetcar, or to have to battle traffic along the lakeshore and only four lanes of traffic trying to get 30, 40,000 people into a baseball stadium? It seems like the location they have now is the most viable and best one, and everything else is kind of a second best.
So let's talk Rail Deck for a second. That is everything's complex now, right? With multiple owners, there's lawsuits. Who has the rights for Rail Deck? I mean, there's been promises of a major park by then planner Jennifer Keesmaat and Mayor Tory. So anything that sells that off for commercial is going to upset a lot of people. Who has the rights to develop it? There is room to put a stadium in there, but there's got to be a lot of political will to, you know, upset a lot of people who are expecting something else. I'd say the same thing with Ontario Place. You know, I think the Ford government's willing to commercialize that a lot faster than a lot of other people are. So that's a complication.
Richard, we are a sports radio station, and there is the team to consider. I mean, you talk about the disruption to, you know, to TFC and to the Argos should, you know, BMO Field work, and we're not sure that happens. But regardless, you're going to be disrupting the team. And it means, you know, the team has to get up and reestablish roots somewhere for a few years only to come back. And I think of the 2000 season when the Leafs and the Raptors moved basically in the middle of the season, like February 20th and 21st of 99 were the day one games for the Leafs. And then the next afternoon with the Raptors against the Vancouver Grizzlies. What do you have to consider with the team when you're going into all of this? Because you've got players to be signed, free agents to look at. I mean, some guys might say, well, that's going to be past my watch. I don't care. And I don't want to be there.
I don't remember that being a factor at all. I mean, the Leafs were playing in Maple Leaf Gardens. You know, time had passed that by so badly in every way. So they were moving down to these great new digs, much bigger, just everything more positive. The Raptors were gypsies. They were, you know, we were, by that time we were playing we moved out of Sky Dome, and I think we played our last few games at Maple Leaf Gardens, or maybe we split between the two. So the players, you know, you guys know players really well. They can accommodate that. It's you know, the Raptors going to play in Tampa this season, that's much more radical than just moving down the street. So I don't think that's an issue. In this case, the Blue Jays would be moving into a better stadium. I think that would be a positive, something to look forward to. So I don't think it's a player that's going to come into play at all.
Richard, and we're speaking with Richard Petty, how concerned would you be from the organization standpoint, though, about, you know, as you just said, it's a major, major upheaval for the Raptors to move to Tampa for half a season, for potentially the entire season. It's one thing for the Toronto Blue Jays to be playing out of Buffalo for an abbreviated 60-game season. But if you actually had to leave Toronto and play games in Montreal, if it's even possible, Vancouver, where else, I don't know, and relocate your franchise for 3-5? I mean, the reports are saying it could take 5 to 8 years to build the stadium. Are you telling me the Toronto Blue Jays aren't going to play in Toronto for 5 to 8 years?
Yeah, there's no doubt. In this world of so much competition in sports, you know, I was talking to Berkey this week, talking about the need to get hockey playing. You know, hockey's not going anywhere in Canada, but list off 3 or 4 southern markets. If they don't play hockey for over a year in Phoenix, in Carolina, in Florida, what's going to happen to all those franchises? There's a couple up for sale right now. So, you know, baseball is a big sport. It's arguably, you know, number 2 sport in the United States. But in Canada, you're out of the market for a long time. It's amazing. All these young kids coming up that were playing catch in their backyard or Little League baseball, they don't do that. To contemplate something that goes 5 to 7 years moved, that's a game changer. I really think they've got to find a site, start building the stadium. As soon as the stadium's built, the team moves down the road and plays in that stadium. Then they get at the really difficult task of tearing down Sky Dome. There was a lot of cement put in that place. It's going to be quite the tear down, environmental issue. But they've got to have the stadium first. But they can't move this franchise for, because they will have to move it for 2 or 3 or 4 years. I don't think they'll have to move it for 5 or 7, but even 2 years, 3 years is a lot to take a major franchise out of its market and expect the fans to be looking for it when it comes back.
Richard, you know, with the movement in sports, and I think of, you know, in our time anyway, Vancouver to Memphis, Seattle to Oklahoma City, you know, Charlotte, New Orleans in the NBA, just to name a few. You know, we've had the Nordique move to Colorado, things like that. Do you think, and you mentioned the Raptors going to Tampa, how much do you think some of these cities, because the Raptors were in demand, Kansas City, St. Louis, you know, Louisville was mentioned, how much do you think these cities want to, quote, audition to say, hey, look, we can support big league sports, whatever it is, be it, you know, basketball, hockey, football, baseball, soccer, whatever. How much do you think there's that kind of mentality going on as well?
Well, I think, you know, Kansas City's been looking for someone forever. Seattle's been looking for tenants forever. So there'll always be markets that want that. I can tell you, the Leafs and the Raptors aren't moving. I think there's a greater risk of Toronto losing the Blue Jays than either of those two teams. I mean, that's the perfect formula over there. You've got two teams synergistically working out of one arena. They're owned by broadcasters who need content. Their arenas, they continue to invest. You know, people say arenas have 30-year life. No, I compare it to the weapons. I compare it to a B-52 bomber. If you keep changing the weapon systems and computers enough, the stadium stays current. So that's not moving anywhere. I think the risk of losing a franchise is more the Blue Jays. And I'm not saying there is a risk, but if I was to give odds on a risk, I'd give it greater to them. I really find it interesting whether Rogers is prepared to spend $1 billion for a franchise. I don't know. To to put the home in the franchise? Do they get a return on that investment? I don't. It doesn't smell right to me. But then again, I don't have the balance sheets and the P&Ls in front of me.
Well, and I know we don't. We certainly don't either, Richard.
I don't either. Richard, my next...
Go ahead, Jonesy.
Let me jump in, E. Richard, my next hope is to get to your bookstore in Windsor at some point, because the last time I was down there, I just missed you. You were in the Civil Rights Museum in a tiny town called Amherstburg, and I went to the museum that day, and it was closed for a private event. And so I went back about an hour or two later, and I was wearing a Raptors hat and hoodie, and the woman said, "Oh, we just had some basketball people here doing something, which is why it was closed early." I said, "Oh, really?" She says, "Yes, Richard Petty and Dwayne Casey." And I thought, you know, I should have banged the door down and barged my way in. So my next goal is to get to your bookstore in Windsor at some point.
Well, we virtually had Rick Vive in last night. We had Berkey in the night before. We had the ex-mayor of Toronto, David Miller, in the night before that. So we're not, you know, a lot of people aren't coming in person because of COVID, but we're real busy. And that Freedom Museum is a real jewel in town. And
it's amazing.
Dwayne came down and came over and spoke about a year and a half ago now. He was awesome, just awesome, talking about, you know, racial justice and stuff. So, yeah, we had Henny down, was here last Sunday, and he bought a lot of books. So if you come, Paul, you got to buy a lot of books. You can't roam around the stacks for a little bit. I expect you to spend a lot of money.
It's all we can do now, right now, Richard, sit and read. I've gone through about 4, 5, 6 of them since COVID hit us in March. So I'll help the local economy, so to speak.
Well, listen, tell me when you're coming, because Henny just shows up on a Sunday. I wasn't, you know, I don't run the bookstore. I'm there a lot, but I'm not there more times. And so if you're coming, let me know and give you a little tour of the town, buy you a coffee, and happily take your credit card.
sounds good.
Well, Jonesy, I'm glad you brought it up, because I was gonna give Richard a chance here to kind of plug the bookstore and mention it towards the end of this interview, but you just did for the last 2 minutes, so no better plug than that. And I don't know, Jonesy, maybe we got to get in the car, or well, separate cars, COVID friendly, and you know, take the show on the road one day or something, and do it from our from a parking lot near the bookstore or something. Richard, we appreciate this. Thanks for your time and your insight today, and all the best to you and your family.
Well, you've taken on a very complex discussion, and it'll be a lot more to follow, and there's more of these discussions about them happening, and a lot of them never do, but we'll see how this one plays out.
Thanks Richard.
Okay, bye now.
There is Richard Petty, former president and CEO of Skydome. He was there from 89 to 94, and of course the former CEO of Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment as well. I don't know, Jonesy. We're far from experts on this topic, but let's go back to where we started 25, 30 minutes ago. You and I both, I think, are in lockstep. I love the idea of a new stadium. I love everything that comes with it. I love the revitalization of the city. I love the creation of jobs. I love the idea of having something nice and new, and it smells new, looks new. I love the idea of natural grass and everything. There's nothing about this I don't like. I just have major, major questions and apprehension and skepticism about the logistics of pulling this off in the exact same location as it is right now. I feel like it's going to have to move to a waterfront location or somewhere else in the city, because I just don't understand how you can rebuild and wait for the teardown before you can even start the rebuild. As opposed to, as Richard said, keep playing in Skydome, keep playing in Rogers Center, and then just simply move into your new location whenever it's ready.
All you have to do is ask anybody who's gone through a home renovation on a smaller scale, right? Knocking down walls, or, you know, I went through it, getting a basement done, and you can't go down, like all this stuff. And it's amazing when it's concluded. But, you know, the old adage, it gets worse before it gets better. And I just, you know, if the Jays are going to do this, they're going to enter into that stage. And I just, you know, I'm thinking more about the team and the production and all of that, you know, the team's production and success, it's all going to be impacted. I love the idea, like you do, Eric. There's nothing that I don't, you know, relish about that. But at the same time, the logistics are a nightmare right now.
All right, we're going to step aside for a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Canadian Nick Stauskas on a new deal with the Milwaukee Bucks, and we'll have news to tell you about a new member of the Toronto Raptors. Find out who that is next on Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Back on Smith & Jones, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. I mentioned going into the commercial break some news regarding the Toronto Raptors and a signing from the Raptors. And, well, we can let you know that forward Alize Johnson has agreed to a deal with the Raptors. Those were some reports according to ESPN. And when they're according to ESPN and they come from Adrian Wojnarowski, you can pretty much take those to the bank. Johnson, Jonesy with the Indiana Pacers the last couple of seasons after being drafted in the second round 2 years ago. So the conversations we were having yesterday about the possibility of O'Shea Brissett maybe vacating that spot that was created by the waiving of Dejuan Hernandez, it would certainly seem like that spot instead going to Alize Johnson.
Yeah, and, you know, they've got a guy with NBA experience. And, you know, let's look, they don't bring him in unless they figure he can help them out in some way or other. So it'll be interesting to see how he's used and you know, where he goes with the team, where he fits in going forward.
All right, well, we'll shift our attention from the Raptors, but stay in the Eastern Conference. And one of the main rivals, maybe the main rival, the number one team in the East the last couple of years, and a team certainly looking to do some damage this year again as well. The Milwaukee Bucks announcing yesterday the signing of a veteran NBAer. He played overseas last year in Spain, and he's a Canadian, and he joins us on the line right now, Nick Stauskas. Nick, thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having me, guys. Good to talk to you guys again.
Hey, Nick, congrats on the deal, first of all, and maybe just give us, you know, shed some light on how this came together and why this is the right time for you to kind of bring it back after the one year overseas and to bring it back here and look to latch on with the Bucks and kind of restart that NBA career again.
Yeah, I mean, the NBA has always been the goal for me, and, you know, last year, you know, although I took a lot of positives out of my experience in the NBA, I took a lot of positives from, you know, playing overseas. Like I said, the goal has always been to play in the NBA, and it was disappointing, you know, being out of the league. But, again, Milwaukee was a team that had shown some interest over the summer, you know, talking with my agent and whatnot, and on Monday last week, I worked out for them at a neutral site. You know, I just worked out for them by myself, a one-on-one workout. It went really well. And I think the main thing they're trying to see for me was that I was healthy. You know, I had surgery on my knee in February. So I think the main thing was just seeing that I was moving well, that my body looked good, that I was healthy, that I was feeling confident again. And, you know, I showed all those things. So, you know, it just made sense. Obviously, this league value shooting, the team that they have right now with, you know, Giannis being a two-time MVP, obviously he's demanding a lot of attention on the court. So, you know, my job is to come in there and knock down shots. I think it's, you know, it's as simple as that. And, obviously that's my specialty. So, you know, I'm really grateful for the opportunity from the organization. I'm just excited to have a foot back in the door and an opportunity to show what I'm capable of.
Well, Nick, you're in a great spot. Good to talk to you, man. You're in a great spot too with Milwaukee and you know, the other people there. It's not just Giannis. When you look around at some of the moves that they've made this year, they're really pushing forward to try and make a run. Were there any other teams that were on your radar, or that maybe the other way around, I should phrase it, were you were on their radar after your year in Spain?
Yeah, actually, Toronto was a team that over the last couple of days, I thought, you know, maybe I was going to end up going to training camp with them. You know, Golden State was another team that was showing some potential of working out. But again, I'm really happy with the situation in Milwaukee. You know, just like I said, after working out for them and them showing the interest that they've had over the past couple of weeks, you know, I felt pretty confident about the decision. And again, I'm super grateful that they're just taking a chance on me. You know, obviously I've been out of the league for a year, and, you know, for a lot of guys, it's difficult, you know, once you're out of the league to kind of, you know, squeeze your way back in, it's not easy. So I'm up for the challenge. And again, I'm super grateful for the Bucks organization for giving me this opportunity. And I'm looking forward to proving a lot of people wrong this year. That's the goal.
Speaking with Milwaukee Bucks guard Nick Stauskas. Nick, that sounds good to say just in itself. Let me ask you this. You just touched on it a little bit. How difficult is it to kind of be in, be out, then get back in? I mean, like those secret clubs and those secret handshakes to kind of to be on the outside and to fight your way back in. How difficult is the whole process? And just even the, you know, for argument's sake, the politics of sometimes pro sports and you know, I'm not naming any names here, but certain guys, you look around the league and think, all right, that guy's latched on still and that guy's still around. How come that guy's not? And how come that guy wasn't involved anymore? And just kind of all the inner workings of the business side of the NBA.
Yeah, no, again, like it's such a competitive league, and there's so many great players all around the world now, which makes it even harder to really latch on. And I think for me, the toughest part about my 5-year career in the NBA, you know, leading up to this point, was, you know, other than my brief stint in Portland, I really hadn't played for any winning teams. I was really a part of a lot of rebuilding, you know, you can even say tanking if you want, you know, process type situations like in Philly. And it's tough because, you know, I felt like even when I was playing well, I was maybe sometimes overlooked because, again, things aren't really valued when you're not on great, when you're on losing teams that are in those tanking situations. Whereas other guys, you know, again, when you get to play for a great organization like a Toronto or a Milwaukee or a Golden State, again, like those role players, you know, even if you're coming off the bench and, you know, you're averaging 5-6 points per game and, you know, playing 15 minutes, I just feel like that's valued a lot more than maybe having a bigger role on a losing team. So, you know, part of, you know, my biggest goal coming into this offseason, getting back in Tampa Bay, was I wanted to be a part of a winning organization and have an opportunity to compete for something real. And obviously Milwaukee has been one of the best teams in the East and the whole NBA. And, you know, I'm hopeful that, you know, I can be a part of something special and hopefully help push them over the top and be a difference maker and potentially win an NBA championship. Cause I know, you know, that's their goal. That's my goal moving forward. But, like I said, man, this league is so competitive. And again, other than the top 30, 40, 50 players in the NBA, the difference between the rest of the guys in the league is so, so small. And getting to play in Europe last year, I would even go as far to say you could replace the bottom 100 NBA players with the top 100 players in Europe, and there would be absolutely no difference in the quality of play in the NBA. It might even go up, you know what I mean? So it kind of goes to show, you know, how much the game is booming around the world, how much talent there is everywhere, and again, how competitive these jobs really are.
Nick, what's going to be different for you this time? Like I heard everything you said about, and I agree with you, being on a winning team, you know, the values are different. You know, the people sacrifice more. There's more of a buy-in. I get that. It's so, so true. And they always say it also depends on where you go to. You've had a few years. You're more of an experienced player now. What's going to be different for you this time around in the NBA? Eric talked about it. You're in, you're out, you're back in. What's going to be different?
To be honest, after being out, I think it's just maybe a little bit of a different mindset, a different appreciation for things. You know, even for me, like, I feel like even sometimes I struggled with, you know, keeping a positive attitude when things, you know, when things weren't going as well as I wanted them to do, and maybe taking for granted the opportunity and the blessings that I had in front of me, like playing, you know, playing at the highest level, playing in the NBA, you know, living out my childhood dream. Sometimes, you know, that got away from me a little bit. And after being out of the league and now, you know, receiving this opportunity with Milwaukee, I definitely think I just have a new appreciation for everything. And I've always been a hard worker and whatnot, but I just feel like the fire that's lit underneath me right now, the hunger, it's really as strong as it's ever been for me, just because, again, like, you know, being out of the league, it hurt. It hurt a lot, and it really resonated with me on how much, you know, how much it meant to me and how bad I wanted to be back. So I'm at the point now where, you know, like I said, I've always been a hard worker, but I'm ready to fight and claw my way back in and do whatever it takes to help this team get over the hump and, you know, kind of get my career back on track and back where I want it to be.
Speaking with Bucks guard Nick Stauskas. Nick, you just touched on this a little bit right there, and you've mentioned it a couple of times, but the year overseas, What did it do to help your game? And in terms of not just, you know, as you mentioned just moments ago, you sort of reigniting the passion and everything else, but just even from a basketball standpoint on the court and guys you played with and who you played for and coaches and whatnot, did you learn anything X's and O's wise about your game and the opportunity to hone your game in a different way against, you know, different teams and you know, different venues and everything? What was the experience like for you on the court, not just sort of the life off the court?
I'd say my experience last year was tough just because I was never fully healthy. And that's why, you know, my season was cut short. I came back to the U.S. in February to get surgery on my knee. Mm-hmm. So again, it was tough for me last year because I never felt like I was truly healthy while I was playing, and that didn't help. But the experience was great. Like, honestly, I had a new appreciation for how high the talent level is all around the world. You know, there was a lot of guys that I had never heard of before, never seen before, that I got to go up against. And I was like, damn, like, this guy can play. Like, why have I never heard of this guy? Or why is he not in the NBA? Like, it really went to show me, like, you know, how much the game has grown worldwide. And it's definitely a different style out there, you know, especially, you know, playing in the NBA for 5 years and having a normal game being, you know, 115 to 110 and then going to Europe and winning a game 65-60. You know what I mean? It's just, it's so different. The level of defensive intensity, the day-to-day practices, the everyday competitiveness, I would say in Europe was a lot higher than a normal 82-game season in the NBA. And that's not to say that the NBA is not competitive. I just think in Europe, because they play less games, every game means more to them. And for me, that was cool because it kind of reminded me a little bit more like a college atmosphere where you're playing, you know, yeah, two games a week and there's a lot more on the line. Whereas in the NBA, you know, some weeks you're playing 4 or 5 games, you know, again, you lose a game and it's just, you got to move on. You take a flight and you're on to the next city. And in Europe, they truly valued every minute, every quarter, every game was analyzed and kind of weighed on a lot more. And it was just a cool experience. You know, I took a lot from it. I feel like, I grew from it. And I definitely had a new appreciation for, you know, life in the NBA and what I had before.
Nick, talk to us about the fan intensity over in Europe, because it's a little bit different from the NBA. Not that the NBA doesn't have that, but the NBA really ramps it up come playoff time and, you know, for big games, or, you know, when a LeBron or a Giannis or somebody comes to town. But it's more consistent over in Europe, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I would say, again, more similar to a college atmosphere where there's like a very loyal, passionate fan base every single game. And like you said, NBA playoffs, the atmosphere is incredible. But, you know, on a Tuesday night in, you know, in Sacramento in February, you may not get, you know, a sold out crowd with an unbelievable environment. Whereas in Europe, it truly was like every game was like a kind of a championship atmosphere, which made it, you know, it was really fun to play in. And some of the, you know, being an opposing player, you know, in an away game, you know, I had a game in Serbia last year that really stuck out to me, Belgrade, Serbia, where, you know, fans were, you know, tossing coins on the court and, you know, giving me the middle finger. And I even remember at the end of the game, you know, fans spit on me. And again, like, to me, it was so disrespectful. And so, like, I was so caught off guard by it. But again, like, as a player, it was kind of just cool to be in that environment where it's, like, so hostile. Like, for me, I feel like I thrive in those environments. So that was very enjoyable to be a part of that. Not getting spit on, but like just the hostility of the whole environment was definitely very different.
I'm glad you clarified that, Nick. Listen,
yeah, no, let's not. I didn't enjoy that. I was ready to throw the hands. But again, just the whole atmosphere of the hostility was really fun to be a part of. And again, it was just, you know, gave me a new appreciation for the game and how much it's loved worldwide.
Hey, Nick, listen, we appreciate the time on the show today, and I know 2020 has been a struggle for a lot of folks. And listen, I don't know your personal business. I don't know if you've been impacted or had anybody close to you impacted by the pandemic and by the virus. But at the same time, you know, a new NBA contract, and I know you got married earlier this year as well. So maybe some positivity coming out of 2020 for at least you and your family. So congratulations again, and thanks for joining us today, and we wish you all the best.
No, thank you, guys. I appreciate you having me on, and hopefully I'll see you guys soon when, you know, if again, I don't know if I'll be coming to Toronto because the Raptors are in Tampa now, but hopefully I'll see you guys soon.
All right, Nick.
Hopefully. Thanks, Nick.
All the best. There is Nick Stauskas. Again, just signed a deal yesterday with the Milwaukee Bucks. We'll come back with more Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Back on Smith & Jones, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Jonesy, we're cleaning out our prize closet with the help of Jiffy, and we've made mystery boxes that contain signed jerseys and more that folks can win. Tune into Good Show, Writer's Block, Tim and Sid to collect keywords, then text them to 590-590 with your name and city to enter. Qualifiers will be chosen during leadoff and immediately win a $100 gift card to spend at Jiffy. Fast and reliable home maintenance for less. Tune in weekday mornings and call in if you hear your name and number announced. The keyword, the next one, will be announced at 4 p.m. during Writer's Block, which, of course, comes up next in just a few minutes. More details at sportsnet.ca/590. We didn't have time for a lot of football today. Obviously, very busy with Major League Baseball and the Toronto Blue Jays specifically and Rogers Center. But by Monday, Bills or Browns. And very interesting to keep an eye on the Ravens this weekend, too. With Lamar Jackson out, we could see Robert Griffin III starting for the Baltimore Ravens.
Interesting stuff. And all that going on with Baltimore. I think Pittsburgh stays undefeated for another week, E, and maybe the 72 Dolphins need to start looking over their shoulder.
Well, we'll talk about it when we are on the unofficial show of the Buffalo Bills on Monday, Jonesy.
Or the Cleveland Browns.
Thanks to Richard Petty and Nick Stauskas for joining us again. Writer's Block is indeed next. Have a great weekend, everyone. It's been Smith and Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.